of all, if you had identical structures in different animals that did not evolve along the same lines. Let's say you had an animal that evolved over here, an animal that evolved over here, and yet they had the exact same structures. What would that tell you? If they didn't evolve them from one another, there has to be a common designer. And we see that in mollusks and vertebrates. We were talking about this over lunch today as I was eating some mollusks at lunch. So the mollusks and the vertebrae supposedly evolve down different lines, but they have the exact same organ. Do you know what the organ is? The eye. So an octopus or a squid has the very same eye that the human has in all of its major structural features. They both have an eyelid, cornea, pupil, iris, ciliary muscle, lens, retina, and an optic nerve. Well, how did this happen? Well, they give it a code name. They call it convergent evolution. Do you know what convergent evolution means? It means it was just accidental. Well, they just happened to have evolved the same organ. Who can believe it? Who can believe it? An octopus that lives on the bottom of the ocean and humans that climb Mount Everest and go to the moon, they supposedly didn't evolve from one another, but they have the same organ. Also consider, if these animals have the same structures that evolve from one another, they say these hands or these five-fingered bones at the end of the tips of the arms, if they evolve from one another, what should they find that proves that they were coded the same? Does anyone know? They should have the same genes or the same DNA, but they don't. They are all different. Notice what Gavin DeBeer says in 1971. What mechanism results in the same organs, the same patterns, in spite of not being controlled by the same genes? And of course, we knew about gene theory all the way back to 1900 from Mendel's genetic theory. He said, I asked this question in 1938, and it has not been answered. Well, I have an answer. Do you know what the answer is? The answer is common design. There is a common designer that put these same features in the animals. Next is embryology. So embryology is one that has been disproven for years, and yet it's continually used in schools and textbooks. Embryology is the idea that we recapitulate evolution as we grow in the womb. At once we were a fish, so we looked like a little fish in the womb. Then we were an amphibian, so we looked like a salamander. Then we were a reptile in evolution, so we looked like a reptile in the womb. Well, Darwin's apostle in Germany was Ernst Haeckel. Ernst Haeckel said, I'm going to help Darwin out here. So he made a set of wood prints, and you see these are the actual prints of the wood carvings here. And he showed that in the first stage, all the embryos looked exactly the same. And yet, as you go to the third stage, you can see the differences. Here's another print here where they all look the same. Do you know what the only problem was with this? He faked them. This is what he said they looked like, and here is what they actually looked like at the first stage. You might say, well, that's just a picture. Well, how about a photograph? Here are some photographs. Does this salamander that Haeckel created with his wood print look anything like the real salamander? No, it doesn't. In fact, Haeckel stood trial before his peers in the 1800s and was found guilty of faking these wood prints. Even Stephen Jay Gould, the famous Marxist and Harvard professor atheist, said Haeckel exaggerated a procedure that can be called fraudulent. We have the right to be astonished by these drawings in a large number, if not a majority, of modern textbooks. Now, Michael Richardson and a group of international experts examined these drawings to see if they were fakes. And in 2000, in the journal Science, he said, it looks like it's turning out to be one of the most famous fakes in biology. And yet these will continue to be used in schools even tomorrow around the country. Number four, the English peppered moth. This is one of the most famous and one of the most popular examples used. And the story goes like this. Before the Industrial Revolution in England, there were two variants of the peppered moth. There was the dark moth and there was the light moth. Well, during the Industrial Revolution, there was so much soot that was put out that it killed the light-colored lichens on the trees and turned the trees dark and black. Coinciding with that, the light-colored moths disappeared, and only the dark-colored moths were left. So a scientist named Bernard Kettlewell said, well, do you know what happened? Is because the moths couldn't hide themselves on the trees anymore, the birds saw the light-colored moths on the trees and ate all the light-colored moths, and all that was left was the black-colored moths, so that proves evolution. Well, what does that prove, really? It proves variation within a kind. It proves microevolution. Let's just explain it this way. What if there were some kind of just crazy, wild UV storm from the sun that pummeled the Earth with UV radiation, and all the light-colored people on Earth developed cancer and died? I know that's not going to happen. It's kind of a crazy idea. But what if it did, and only the dark-colored people were left? Would that prove evolution? No, it would only prove that the light-colored people die. And yet, this is still used in textbooks. It only proves variation within a kind. And even in 1971, esteemed Professor L. Harrison Matthews was asked to write the foreword to Darwin's book, The Origin of Species. And in this, he says, this is 1971. He said, the peppered moth experiment shows survival of the fittest, but they do not show evolution in progress. Then why is it still used?